again. We've got a pretty good number present for a Sunday evening. I hope you enjoyed the beautiful day we had. I'm going to tonight do the first of what will probably be a number of lessons that in some sense are interrelated. It's not a series by any means, but the whole, you might say the whole thrust, the whole idea behind the spiritual options, that whole program, of course, focusing on these little cards, passing them out, and hopefully drawing people to study, whether by a correspondence course or online correspondence course, so to speak, or study in person by way of internet conferencing, or hopefully and eventually in person with individuals. Hopefully we'll be able to accomplish that. But I said all of that to say this. The approach that I'm taking, and you will see that shortly as the first correspondence lesson comes up online, but the approach I'm taking really is to try to reach out to people out there, either from the standpoint that they know virtually nothing, there are those out there, of course, or a number of other people who have some exposure to religion, but may have no clue, no idea, really what we do. And of course, we get to that in the course of study. But one of the things that I do is go through sort of a history of the church in that first lesson. And I come to the point of saying what I'm going to say tonight, although I don't go by any stretch of the imagination into as much depth. But I just want to kind of familiarize or maybe make us a little more familiar with this whole idea of the modern mega church. So if you've got an outline, if you picked one up, you know that that's what I'm talking about. And so I'm going to sort of profile this, what really is a trend of church, among churches around the world, and especially in the United States. You know, the mega church, it's a relatively new term. I checked Webster's to see if the term had made it in there yet, and at least online I couldn't tell that it was in the dictionary. But it's very much a term that's in use, at least in religious circles. But the modern megachurch is really a new phenomenon. If you look in the Bible and you think in terms of the biblical view or the biblical picture, really there was a megachurch. Megachurch means a very big, obviously, big, large church. There was in Jerusalem, starting in Acts chapter 2, with 3,000 members, and then growing to 5,000 men, and then in chapter 6, multitudes joined. There was a megachurch. But since that time, as you study down through history, really, for various reasons, practical and otherwise, Christians have established, and really the focus of attention has been on establishing more congregations, not larger ones. In fact, when churches grew to a certain point, there used to be a term that was used, kind of gone out of usage. But brethren, for example, and others used to speak of a swarm. And this was division in a congregation, a good-natured one, not based on any problem, but where one group of Christians would sort of swarm, like a swarm of bees or whatever. They would go to another locale, another location, and start another congregation. And the idea was to have more and more churches in each community, not one huge church growing in number. And if you look at the passage Percy read in 1 Corinthians 12, and others like it, that shows one of many, if you notice the focus of attention in 1 Corinthians 12 or Romans 12 or Ephesians 4, any of these passages, the idea is on each member supplying his or her talents, abilities in a local congregation. It is one body, members in particular, and each one does his part. In that particular passage, you have a foot and a hand and so forth and so on. Everybody contributing their part, and thus it becomes a viable working congregation and a growing one. And the idea, I believe, of the Lord would be that more and more congregations like that would be fostered and started as the church grew. But this movement is different in philosophy, and we're going to talk about that. I want to look at a little history of it, and then more importantly, I want to look at the philosophy behind it, because that's what the philosophy behind is what we're really dealing with as we as we address, people at large out in our world here. So we'll do a brief profile of the movement. We'll look at a very well-known example, and then we'll kind of talk about some of the basic philosophy behind the movement. A megachurch is a church, by definition. Somebody decided upon this. It doesn't really matter. But it, by definition, is a church that has at least 2,000 people attending its weekend, usually Sunday, sometimes Saturday and or Sunday, but its weekend service on a weekly basis. Those are primarily the criteria. So in other words, when the church is meeting, if you've got every weekend service has at least 2,000 people attending, don't have to be the same ones, but 2,000 people attending, it's technically a mega church. According to the Hartford Institute's database, in America right now, there are more than 1,600 such mega churches in this country, ranging everywhere from that 2,000 all the way up to the largest that has about 50,000 on a weekly basis, close to 50 anyway, in attendance. And about 50 of those churches have attendance, that is 50 out of the 1,600 have attendance above 10,000. There's at least one of those in New Jersey and one of those that's very close. I'll talk about those in just a moment. The movement is generally associated with United States churches, but it really began in other places. And I'll show you some pictures here. I don't know if this helps anything or not, but we'll sort of look at some pictures. That's one of the earliest ones. You may or may not be able to read its name up there, probably can. But this is the Metropolitan Tabernacle. If you're a student of church history, so to speak, you may remember the name Charles Spurgeon from the 1800s. You might even have picked up something and read something by Spurgeon, author of a number of books and so forth. Spurgeon was a very popular evangelist in the late 1800s, and this was the church that was his home base. And when Spurgeon especially was preaching, this church averaged about 5,000 people in weekly attendance. And you get an idea of the inside of the Metropolitan Tabernacle, that little picture in the right corner. I don't know how well you can see that, but it's full of people. And that pretty much was the picture in the late 1800s. So this was one of the earliest mega churches. When people start talking about them and writing about them, looking at the modern ones and so forth, they'll usually go back and start about here at the Metropolitan Tabernacle. Another early example, some of you might find this interesting, but another early example, and you tell us an old picture, was the Angelus Temple in Echo Park maybe? Or East Lake, I can't remember, but it doesn't matter, out in Los Angeles. And this was actually started by a very well-known female evangelist from the early 1900s. If any of you have ever seen the movie Elmer Gantry, some of you, especially older, will be well familiar with that movie. If you've ever seen it, starring Burt Lancaster, the Gene Simmons character in that movie, the woman that Sister Falconer that goes around preaching and so forth, that whole character was patterned after the woman that really started this church in the 1920s. Formed a new denomination. She was the pastor, she was the preacher in this four-square gospel church in the 1920s, 1923, started this. And this was another of the earliest mega churches. By the 1950s, churches like this were becoming... let me back up and say it like this. In London, that 5,000-member church or 5,000 in attendance, this one that had several thousand in attendance, these were... aberrations. This wasn't what was common. At this particular time, even in the 1920s, went back and did a little research, most churches, the biggest of them, numbered in about the 200s. And most congregations were even smaller than that. So there were a whole lot of little congregations strewn across the land. This was an aberration. But by the 1950s, the attention was to pool, to join together. A lot of times, as transportation allowed it, you can see what's happening here. But as transportation allowed it, churches would sometimes combine, join with each other, especially if they were of the same faith or close to it. And they would come together, and where you might have had several smaller congregations, now you had a much larger one, obviously. And there was a reason for that, and I'll mention that in just a moment. One of the things, too, that led to some of this, and you can even tell if you look very carefully here at the picture above this thing, there are two big antennae. And these were radio, for radio broadcasting, but eventually for television. And it was television that was the medium that drew people. So they were broadcasting their services. And this is when you began, especially in the 50s, to have some of these very popularly well-known people preaching and attracting people to come. The service was recorded, sometimes broadcast live, and people were attracted to it. And with the 1990s, there was a resurgence of the megachurch. It just really mushroomed. And that was because, oddly enough, of the Internet. The Internet became a powerful tool. And I was reading some commentary, and I'll kind of leave this point, but I was reading some commentary, and the Internet has been cited as the number one reason behind the mushrooming of megachurches. You might do some research and reading on that, but it's a very interesting thing. We might not believe or think that the Internet could be so powerful. Maybe some of us do understand that, but it is cited as major reason for it. So with the advent of popular media, such as radio, television, and then ultimately the Internet, these churches began to grow. Now, that's the history of it, and I stay on that all day, but I'll get off of that. As we come more in down to our time, what do we have and what do we have locally? I thought you might appreciate just seeing some of the local churches. This is the Christian Cultural Center that's located in East New York. Obviously, as you can see on there, in Brooklyn. So this is right in our backyard. I mean, we have such a church right here. This is a church that was founded in 1979 by Dr. A.R. Bernard, and it's a facility in Brooklyn that sits on an 11-acre site and has currently over 29,000 members. So we're talking about a humongous church right here. The Christian Cultural Center is the largest evangelical church, of course, in the New York region. There is also I don't know if I have a picture of this. I went back and forth with what I put on here. So, yeah. There's also the Greater Allen Cathedral in New York. It is an AME, an African Methodist Episcopal Church, and this one is in Jamaica, Queens. So it also has 23,000 members. So these are huge churches, of course, in the boroughs of New York City. Now, in New Jersey, like I said, there's at least two. There's one of them that has 9,200 members, and I didn't put a picture on here of it. And I found I was looking for a better picture of this one, but I hope you can see that fairly well. But this is the St. Matthew's Baptist Church in Williamstown, New Jersey, about 30 miles from Philadelphia, if you look on the map. It was established all the way back in 1924, but it's been growing ever since, and its membership is currently about 13,000. Like I said, there's another one in the state, about 9,200. So we have two really large churches right here in New Jersey. This church, if you're looking at this thing, you really can't tell that well, but there are a series of buildings here in this whole extended facility. And some of the things that they advertise, and I put it just like that, they advertise what they have, and I'll just read this for you. The church is currently building a state-of-the-art fitness center. It has an Olympic-sized swimming pool. It currently has a gym, an arcade, and an auditorium that will seat 2,000 people. A mini mall is currently under construction for St. Matthew's Baptist Church. It also has a youth center and a youth department that serves the needs of 700 young people, school and otherwise, from kindergarten through 12th grades. Now you can see some of the kinds of things going on in these churches. If you talk megachurch, though, you are probably familiar with this place. The Lakewood Church, located in Houston, Texas, and if you're not familiar with the name of that church and with that church, undoubtedly you're familiar with this guy, and that is Joel Osteen. If you're not, and you care about such things, somewhere around 11 or 12 o'clock tonight, I know at least around here, you can catch his broadcast. He comes on weekly, and he's a pretty good speaker, so if you would like to turn over there and see what this place is all about, see one of these services in a mega church. This will be, you know, one of the current services, and he will most probably be preaching in this particular place. It is a non-denominational, and again, I'll put up my fingers for the quotation marks. It is a non-denominational Christian mega church, quote unquote. It has a Baptist, at least his dad was ordained Baptist, John was ordained as a Baptist, a somewhat Baptist, really fundamentalist background. I'll talk a little more about that in just a moment, for many of them do. It has that background, but now it claims to simply be non-denominational, which really means interdenominational. It just gathers everybody. It is the largest church in the United States. It has a weekly attendance from 43,000 to 50,000 people in attendance, and it is obviously the largest such megachurch. The only churches that really rival that kind of attendance, oddly enough, are in Korea, of all places. There are some huge megachurches there. But this is the biggest one, and this one really becomes the model. If you want to talk about the megachurch in the United States, this is the one that most people focus on. The media focuses on him. People look at the Lakewood Church. Now, I'm going to kind of leave Joel up there and let him just be preaching and so forth while I talk a little bit about the philosophy behind it. Because this is what's important to us. If we're going out and we're meeting people and we're talking to people that are thinking in terms of religion, once in this country, as people thought in terms of religion, they probably, as late as the 50s and 60s, maybe even 70s, people thought in terms of the local church. I know in the South it was this way. The local Baptist church or whatever it might be, you might think in terms of a white building or eventually a brick building. And maybe somewhere between 100 and 300 people would gather there in your larger communities anyway. We gather there on a weekly basis. Everyone pretty much knew everybody else. They associated with each other out in the community, et cetera, et cetera. And that was really the picture of the American church. That has nothing to do with this. When you're looking at this, you're talking about over 40,000 people coming to this giant facility, and this man is addressing them. And if you notice, this is kind of like a sports facility. He's preaching, but if you're in a place, and in fact, I think this place is a former sports facility. I might be wrong about that, so don't hold me to it. But if you're sitting in that place, if you're down front, fine, but most people are so far removed from him, that's why you have the big screen of him in the background. It's kind of like if you go to a football game or a baseball game or something like that, and if you don't get the most expensive seats, you're so far removed, you really watch the game on a big screen. I've sat at baseball games watching the action on a big screen, burning up, it'd be 100 degrees or whatever. And I love it. I love being there. But I've asked myself, is this dumb or what? You know, I'm watching this game on TV, sitting in this hot sun. I could be back home in an air-conditioned room watching it. But nonetheless, they're watching him on this big screen, and you, as you can see here. It's just totally different. It's not your local church, friendly community church. There's a whole different philosophy behind it. So why would anyone choose that? I mean, really, we might start looking at that and saying, well, you know, I kind of like the atmosphere of coming to a local church and knowing people, or at least being able to get to know them, and, you know, just get friendly with people and all of that kind of thing. I like that. So what would be the big attraction about kind of getting lost in a stadium? I can do that at a baseball game. I mean, roughly about the same attendance, if you think about it. 43, 50,000 people, that's about the attendance of a baseball game. So what's the attraction to that? Well, if you begin to look at the church, why would a church want to be a 50,000-member church? A lot of you are probably thinking, money. And you'd be right. But this is really where the philosophy begins. Here's the idea. Most of these churches are fundamentalist in origin, and the fundamentalists are people who have basically a set of fundamentals or basic doctrines that they agree upon. Where I went to seminary, they were fundamentalists. They had 10 basic points that everyone had to agree to be part of the church, to be on the faculty, etc. And they were things you would agree with, for the most part, at least. I think there would be about 3 of them you wouldn't agree with. But for the most part, they were things like, you believe in the inspiration of the Bible. Lakewood claims belief in the inspiration of the Bible. You believe in the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. You believe in the resurrection of Jesus. Literal, physical resurrection of Jesus. Actual resurrection. You believe in the virgin birth and things like that. So they list those things. They're fundamentalist in origin. And yet, the doctrine is not really the primary focus. In fact, whereas where I went to school and, you know, and the church that was associated with it, Jerry Falwell's church, you had to believe those things. In many churches like this, you wouldn't. They would want you to believe those things, but they really wouldn't, it wouldn't be that important that you did. In fact, he gets interviewed sometimes. If you ever watch him separate and apart from his preaching, when he's on some talk show or whatever, and someone starts pressing him, when it gets to the doctrinal issue, he really struggles with it. And I don't mean because he doesn't know. He's a very bright guy. He knows. But he starts struggling with the idea of, do you emphasize this doctrine? Do you really believe this doctrine? Do you make, quote unquote, your parishioners believe this doctrine? And that kind of thing. He won't force that because obviously the less doctrine, the less the chance for division. You have to understand, the congregation we have here is very doctrinally focused. A person would not be allowed to come up here to the Lord's table and begin to teach. You know, we teach about the Lord's Supper every Sunday. But if someone began to teach that it really, we're doing this by tradition, but it really isn't important that we do this every Sunday, we would correct that. We would publicly correct it, and we would pull the individual aside, and we would say, that's wrong, and here's why. From the Bible, it's wrong, and can't be allowed to teach that. You can express your beliefs, and you can defend them from the Word of God. But we can't allow you just to say whatever you want to say or believe whatever you want to believe for the congregation. We won't espouse that. We won't stand for that. If I were to stand up here and say, you know, brethren, I've done some studying, and this whole baptism thing for forgiveness of sins, I believe in baptism, but I think you're saved before baptism. You wouldn't tolerate that, nor could you. So we're very doctrinally oriented. You see the point there. But if you're in a mega church, you really struggle with that because the less doctrine, the less the chance for division. In fact, unity is stressed. Now you say, well, we stress unity. Absolutely. We stress unity based on all of us having a like precious faith, as Peter said. But not a unity based on disagreement or acceptance of disagreement. Unity is stressed in a megachurch because a unified effort fosters mega growth. The more we can unite, the more we can be unified, and again, you would see the idea would be the less doctrine, so we can unify more, the more we will have this large attendance and maintain it. And there's a good reason for that. So what you have, and if you turn him on tonight, and you listen to him, and you listen to him next week, and the week after, and 6 months from now, and next year, you will get a message that will be biblically based. That is, there will be some scripture, and he'll do a good job with it. And like I said, the guy's a great speaker, so you know you will enjoy listening to him. But if you listen to what he says, it will be a message that focuses on what is appealing to the American person, especially, let me rephrase that, the affluent, ambitious American person right now. You'll get a message that is positive mental attitude based. It will be the philosophy of achievement through optimism. Believe it and you can achieve it. You may even hear that phrase tonight. Confess it and you can have it. It's this whole confess it idea that God has taught us to confess what you want. So you confess it, and there's an emphasis on that. It's the whole idea of strengthening the mind. Be positive, be encouraging, all of that kind of thing. And it's that environment. And never, ever be negative whatsoever, because if you're, except about not being positive, because if you're negative and you begin to say you must do so and so and you have to live a certain way and all of that kind of thing, then your individual sitting in the pew will say, well, no, I'm not buying into that philosophy. So you're not very likely to hear a sermon tonight if you turn on that broadcast about marriage, divorce, and remarriage and the very strict laws of Jesus about those things. So it's the idea of uniting on what we can unite on and be all of us be positive and that kind of thing. In fact, Joel and the Lakewood Church stresses what they call word of faith teaching. And you can go on the internet and you can read about word of faith teaching. It comes from a phrase in the book of Romans. But here's what it basically is. It is a stripped down or pared down version of the Bible is what it amounts to. Now, he would say, no, absolutely not. I open the same Bible you open and preach from it. That's right, he does. But he has a certain set of verses that he emphasizes, that he preaches. And it's not just Joel. I'm picking on him because he's the largest. You know, his church is the largest. But it's all of these places. You go to New Jersey and see the same thing, hear the same thing. It's the idea of the verses that people want to hear, the verses that fit. And so this is the philosophy and this is the preaching you're going to hear. Now, why? Well, the megachurch targets, and when I was in school, this is what we were taught. And this is the language we used, so I'm going to use it because that's what I'm familiar with. But it targets the whole man. It's called the holistic approach to preaching. And the idea is to appeal to the whole man. They would say, and Jerry Falwell would have said, Joel would say, others would say, that man doesn't simply have spiritual needs. And in fact, his physical needs overshadow his spiritual needs. Well, yeah, I understand that. I understand that if you have some illness, or you have some emotional problem, disturbance, or whatever, that overshadows your spirituality. And if you let it, it'll even choke your spirituality completely out. I understand that. I also understand, and I know that we used in seminary all these passages where Jesus would approach someone on the street, and if he was blind, he would heal them. If he was lame, he would heal him, and all of that. And then he would tell them, you know, upon healing, he'd tell them, go and be faithful, sin no more, etc. The idea is to follow that philosophy. Now, it sounds great. I mean, really, it sounds great. But in practical terms, here's the way it's translated. They would say, many of them would say, not all of them, but many of them would say, you can't be like Jesus and lay hands on the lame or the blind and heal them. But what you can do is reach out and address their physical needs. So you appeal to potential members. It's a very, always, a very evangelistic church. And you appeal to potential members by addressing the needs of the individual. There's, you know, people, these people, Lakewood and others, they study successful business models. Walmart, for example, and models of businesses like that are studied for their evangelistic efforts. Now, you might say, what in the world does Walmart have to do with evangelism? Well, think about it. Walmart is a mega store. And it's a mega store that appeals to the largest group of people. And the philosophies behind that are the same philosophies that get infused in the mega church evangelistic outreach. You do, you know, intensive studies You poll people to see what they need, what they want. Walmart does the same thing. What do you need? What do you want? What are you looking for when you walk through that door? What would bring you to Walmart? What would keep you away? They do intensive opinion polls and market research. Again, is the church doing this? But it's the idea of what do you need? What appeals to you? How many times have you heard people talk about, either when they came here or they left here, saying, I'm looking for, and fill in the blank. And whatever it is they're looking for is what a megachurch wants to fill in their lives. So if a person is going out there and they're looking for that weekly pump-up positive mental attitude, then great, because we've got that. But really, if they're looking for an Olympic swimming pool to swim in on a weekly basis, well, we've got that down in New Jersey. They may or may not have it here, I don't know, but we know they got it in New Jersey. If some kid is looking for an arcade to go to on a daily basis, well, they got that. If they're looking for basketball teams and volleyball teams and softball teams and bowling leagues and on and on and on, well, they got that. If the parents are looking for a school, a private school, to send their kids to at less tuition than the private school they can send them to over in wherever, well, we got that. And you see where all of that is going. And the megachurch brings in enough affluent people with enough money. You think in terms, we had 151 people this morning. Look at our contribution. Think of what a 50,000 group of people, especially if many of those people were affluent type individuals that had been drawn in. And we're talking about people with lots of money. What kind of weekly contribution would you get? And you can take all of that money and build these gigantic facilities with all of these amenities that appeal to people out there. And so you can see the point. A very polished advertising effort targets people, brings in people. They have, in many respects, unconventional worship services. This word of faith teaching that they emphasize, and you see it tonight if you turn it on, undoubtedly. You may see him say something, and it triggers this massive response from thousands of people repeating a verse out of the Bible or whatever. There are things like that. And people get into that. I mean, just to use modern vernacular, you know, people just get into it. They like it. And so it doesn't matter. You know, we're not looking to the Bible saying, you know, what are we supposed to be doing when we get here on a weekly basis? No, we're looking at what appeals to people. Do they like this exciting, upbeat, energetic, everybody throw your hands in the air, everybody, you know, jam together and all? Do they like that? And if they like that, well, then we have that. Because that's what appeals to people. Now, how do we compete with that? If I'm going out here and I'm handing a card out to somebody, and I'm going to attract them to a website, then no matter how we say it, I mean, let's be fair, no matter how we say it, what we're going to end up saying is, you got to go to the Word of God, and you got to do what it says. How do you compete with arcades and swimming pools and positive mental attitude and very positive sermons that never tell you you're wrong about anything? Well, let me suggest something to you. The Lord's church doesn't compete. And it doesn't have a competitor. Some churches and some members of the church try to compete. And it reminds me, you know, I'm Western movies background, love them. There was a common phrase, you know, the gunslingers in the Old West, and you'll see them in all the movies. Some guy with a fast gun, you know, and he's always warned, there's somebody faster. There's always somebody faster. You know, if we try to be the church that appeals to all the physical needs, if we try to go out there like the business model would say and poll the people and find out what they want, try to give them what they want, we will fail. Because like the proverbial gunslinger, there's always somebody faster. They've already done it. They're already bigger. And they're already better at it. You can't compete with that, is the point. But the truth is, we're not supposed to. I want you to read some passages in the Bible. Now, this was not a lesson where I mentioned a lot of passages, but I didn't turn to a lot. But I do want you to turn to a couple of passages with me. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 3. If I ask the question, what is the church? What is the mission of the church? What are we about? What identifies us? This is what identifies us. In 1 Peter chapter 3, Paul said it like this. Begin with me in verse 14. These things write I unto you, hoping to come unto you shortly. If I tarry long, that thou mayest knowest how thou oughtest to behave or conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, and notice what it is. What identifies the church of the living God is that it is the pillar and ground of the truth. The church has no competitor in that. I didn't care what other churches, mega churches, or whatever have out there. It cannot compete with the Lord's church and the Lord's people when it comes to the truth. The church is the pillar and ground of the truth. What we have to offer people is the truth. Now, we come together, I think it was TJ that said this morning, he made reference to 1 Corinthians 16. He talked about the fact that we pool our efforts, we give, and that's how we raise money, and that's different from charitable, and it's different from a lot of churches. That's right. We pool what we have, both our resources and our abilities. One of us is a foot, another is a hand, etc., etc. You get the analogy. But we come together and we pool all of that. What we have in common, what we're offering people, is the truth. Someone can come through those doors back there today. First time they ever have come into a Church of Christ. They may be like I once was, virtually know nothing. They don't know anybody. They don't know anything really about the Bible, but they can come through those doors. And if they will stay long enough and associate with enough people, they won't get everything from me because I don't know everything. But if they'll stay long enough and associate with enough people, they will learn the truth because that's what we're about. And we have that where no one else does. We have more of it. I'm not saying no church out there, no Baptist church or anything else has no truth. I've been in those denominations. They have some truth. But not to the level of the truth. Not the pillar and ground of the truth. The focus of attention in the Lord's church is the truth. Read one other passage with me. Look at Matthew 28. This is the mission, or if you will, the Great Commission of the church. And look at it carefully. Jesus, when he appealed to the apostles here in Matthew 28, said it like this. There were 11 of them at the time. Two more were obviously going to be added. But to the apostles he said, verse 18, all authority is given unto me in heaven and in earth. No one emphasizes the authority of Jesus Christ more than we do. We don't compete in that. It's not a competition. There is no competitor. The Lord's church gives total emphasis to the authority of Jesus Christ. There is no headquarters, no denomination. There is no creed. There is no confession of faith. There is nothing, no other document for you to look at, etc., etc., etc. When you come through those doors at the back, someone will meet you, and eventually, if you will listen, they will talk to you about the Bible, and Jesus has all authority. And that's what we emphasize. No one competes with us in that by God's design. Now notice verse 19. On the basis of that total authority of Jesus, go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. That's what we do. We make disciples. How? We baptize them. For forgiveness of their sins, we learn elsewhere, but we baptize them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit by their authority. And then we teach them. Notice verse 20. That's what we do. We don't have arcades and swimming pools and all of that other stuff. We don't have that. But we have this. We teach them. All of us. We teach them to observe all things whatsoever I, Jesus, have commanded you. And that's what we have. The people we're going to attract to this church are the people who have good and honest hearts who are looking for that. And there are some. Are there as many as might be attracted to another church where you could have all of these facilities and basically do whatever it is you want to do? No. No, and not ever. But are there people out there who are looking for the truth? Well, look at yourselves. How many of you have come from backgrounds where you, I know some of you had mothers and fathers who were members of the church, but chances are, even if you did, they weren't. And they didn't have that background. There are people out there. And that, when we hand such a card and attract them to the teaching and all of that, that is the person that's going to be attracted to this church. I heard someone make a comment, and I'll close with saying this, and I'm going to sort of misquote the comment for reasons that I wouldn't want anybody to be embarrassed. So I hope you understand that. But I heard someone make a comment recently about how another church in this area they were familiar with had so much more to offer. That's not an exact quote, but that was the sentiment. So much more to offer. And I thought about that. Didn't say much about it, but it really disturbed me. And I went home and I thought about that. And I thought, no. No, that's dead wrong. Those churches out there have so much less to offer. Did you know I can find an arcade and a swimming pool and all of those things somewhere else? But what I can't find is the truth. And it is the pearl of great price. You have that. Hold on to that. I would use the term be proud of it, but you'd know what I meant by it anyway. But treasure that and offer that treasure to other people. If you're here tonight, you're not a Christian. If you believe in Jesus, that He is the Son of God with all authority. And tonight you would be baptized for forgiveness of your sins, just like Matthew is saying, you can be a member of the Lord's church. Maybe you're here tonight and you've done that, and there's something in your life that needs to be put behind you so that you can really go out there and be a good example to people as you lead them to Jesus. If you need to come for any reason, please come while Kenny leads us in this song.